You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the ESPN FC studios. I'm Sebastian Salazar. We're going to be joined in just a little bit by Shaka Hislop, the return of his weekly power rankings. Also, Mina Rizzuki will join us for some more Italian perspective on Inter Milan crashing out of the Champions League. But we're going to start the show discussing Manchester United, who also earlier this week crashed out of the Champions League. For more on that, we're joined by Stuart Robson and Stevie Nicol. Robbo, I'll start with you. First time we've had you on the show since Tuesday. What happened in that match? Where did it all go wrong for Manchester United? And who's to blame? Because it seemed to, in every single way, from the opponent to the fact that United only needed a draw, be perfectly set up for what this Manchester United team does best.
Yeah, unfortunately, they got the tactics wrong. By playing three at the back and playing Shaw as the left-sided centre-half, he played with wing-backs, he had two holding midfield players, and yes, he set up to counter-attack. But when you haven't got time, managers keep saying it over and over this season, I haven't had chance to work with the players. We don't have chance to do the training. Well, to change the system before a very, very big game and not have any time to work on it showed. The back three didn't communicate with each other. Shaw went into midfield at times and got caught out of position. Wan-Bissaka was then having to come round on the cover because Lindelof was going too far across and then Maguire was going too far across. They were all over the place defensively. And because Leipzig didn't really play with the centre forward and they were dropping into midfield, that was being overloaded. So the two holding midfield players couldn't dominate the game. And it was all wrong from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer right from the start. And again, he changed it at half-time and made an improvement and they nearly got back into the game. But you have to set your team up at the start of the game to be in the game. And he didn't do that. They started too slowly, got the tactics wrong, and that's why they lost the game. And therefore, the main culprit was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Stevie, a lot of talk about this decision to go with a back five. And then 90 seconds into the game, you're beat down the wing to go down 1-0 in a game you can't afford to lose. How do you see this as a tactical mistake from Ole, or do we point to the fact that this team didn't show up for the first 15 minutes and put the responsibility then on the players?
Well, I think you can say it's a bit of both, but no question when you put a team into a situation where they're not quite comfortable with what they're supposed to be doing and are not that experienced in what they're supposed to be doing against a side like Leipzig, then don't be surprised if things go wrong. At the same time, even though you're in a position like that with a good attitude and a fight and a spirit to start the game, you can still defend well with numbers. But I'm 100% with Robbo. I do not understand why he wouldn't go with basically a 4-5-1. It's simple. Everybody knows it. Everybody understands it, particularly on the flanks. You've got a fullback and you've got a kind of wide inside midfielder doing both on both sides. So you're rock solid in the middle of the park. Listen, they only needed a draw. And as you said, it was set up to counter-attack. So why did they not just block everything off and not leave the opportunity for anybody, never mind a side as good as Leipzig, to destroy them in the wide areas? It made no sense to me.
Robbo, as we catalogue this mistake, is this an experience mistake or a quality mistake from Ole, the manager?
I think a bit of both. I mean, the problem I've heard from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and I've seen from Manchester United over the course of this season and a lot of last season, is that they start games poorly. Now, that tells me that he's sending his team out not really knowing what he's looking for. He hasn't said, even against West Ham on last week, he said, in the second half, we played how I wanted them to play. In the first half, we were too slow. We passed into midfield. We kept on getting caught on the ball. That's his job. The first 20 minutes, when he sends his team out, this is how I want you to play. Stick the ball in behind the opposition. Let's get forward. Let's try and dominate. Let's press high up the field. And then we can play our football from there. But he's sending his team out hoping. And as a coach, as a manager, that's the worst thing you can do. Send your team out hoping they might perform. And that's what we're seeing from Manchester United. A team that we're not quite sure what we're going to get because they've not been set up properly or they aren't ready, prepared for the game.
Stevie, in the aftermath of this game, Ole has come out and taken responsibility. But at the same time, in the same sentence even, he says we didn't turn up. Is he signaling the players there? Because there are some guys that you can point at and say they didn't really turn up in this match.
Listen, the buck always ends and starts with the manager. And how many times is he going to say we didn't turn up? I mean, it's just repetitive. And the first job you have to do when your team steps on the field, listen, you can't play for them and you can't make decisions for them, but you can rile them up and make sure that they've got steam coming out their ears before the whistle goes. And at the very least,
is that a manager's responsibility, Stevie, at this level? Is that the manager's responsibility? This
is supposedly
world-class.
Absolutely.
To motivate
Don't
players.
Listen, you've been listening to Roy Keane.
It's a must-win game.
You've been listening to Roy Keane. Roy Keane says, that's their responsibility. Listen, do you know why teams prepare for every game? It's called preparation. Mm. And you know whose job the preparation is? It's the coach. And the reason you prepare is so that when you go on the field, you're ready to go. Now, whether that means you go around kicking people up the backside or arguing with them, whatever you have to do as a coach to make sure that each individual steps on that field ready to go, then you have to do it. If you sit back and go, oh, that's not on me, then you've got no chance. And by the way, if they smell that you're not up for that, they'll take advantage of it. So, yes, part of the responsibility is the players, but the biggest part of the responsibility is the manager. Mm.
The press in England, and specifically The Guardian, reporting then that United brass still have confidence, still have faith in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, despite the fact that they crashed out of Champions League. They point specifically to his win ratio percentage. But, Robbo, we're a week away from being 2 years into his tenure at Old Trafford. The board at Manchester United clearly seen signs of hope. Do you see any?
Not really, no. I don't think some of the young players that he was saying that were going to be the future of Manchester United, I'm not sure they're developing as they should do, and that may be down to the lack of coaching that's been going on. I don't see they've got a structure. I can't see a way of that they're playing week in, week out. It changes from one half to the other half. So it means the manager's not preparing his team properly. I can't see too much hope for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The way he could have done it is if he got a much better coach in behind him and said, OK, I'm not the finished article, but I'm going to bring in the best possible coach I can who's going to help me out, and that will make me better, it make the team better. But no, he's got a bunch of yes men in behind him, so he's not getting great advice either. I can't see at the moment any way Manchester United are going to be challenging for the Premier League or the Champions, obviously not this season, over the next couple of years. And that's a problem, and that's why I think at some point they have to get rid of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Surely if you're on the board at Manchester United and you sit down in your meetings, whenever they have them, every 6 months or whatever, if they had a meeting tomorrow, surely the first question would be, gentlemen and ladies, do you think we've made any progress from the day Mr. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer walked through the door? And not one of them is able, in all honesty, to be able to turn around and said, yes, we have made progress, because they ain't made any progress. Mm. They are no better today than they were the day he walked through the front door. And the fact that he's been there the amount of time he has been, and we're sitting here talking about, we don't know what you're going to get from Manchester United. How can you say that that is success or being better than they were when he walked through the door? Mm. It's really as straightforward as that.
What I would go back and say is that if you knew what your job was, you knew what the manager wanted, you'd do it. It's when you don't know what the manager wants from you. When the first time you play the ball forward, he says, no, play it short. And then when you play it short, he says, no, play it long. And that's when you have a problem. That's when players go out on the field and are unsettled. They can't be motivated because they're not quite sure what the right role is, what they should be doing. And that's when you have a problem. And that's what I see from Manchester United players at the moment.
Mm. You mentioned the term unsettled. One of the main things unsettled right now at Manchester United, Paul Pogba, and his future. Of course, they face Manchester City at Old Trafford on Saturday. We look at Pogba's recent performances, the goal against West Ham, had a little bit of a spark against Leipzig. Robbo, would you start him against City?
He's still one of their best players. He's obviously had a problem. He's got a problem with the manager slightly. Is he a better player than Matic? Yes, he is. Is he a better player than McTominay? Yes, he is. So I would certainly play Paul Pogba. If you've got a player of that quality, you've got to get the best out of him. And wherever you're playing, it's in a midfield three on the left-hand side, as he played for Juventus, you've got to get the best out of him. He's a better player than the midfield players they've got in the side, maybe apart from Bruno Fernandes.
Stevie, I want to know if you think he should start, though, based on most of your answers to this question.
No,
I think I already know. Let me ask it to you this way, though.
Why would you start him? Why would you start him, mate? Because we already know that Manchester City are going to have more of the ball. And all we've done, particularly, is criticise how he cannot... He's a liability in their own half, their own defensive shell. He's a liability. So why would you play him against a team that you know is going to have more possession in and around your defensive area? It makes no sense to play the guy. That's why he hasn't been playing. Because he can't do anything
again,
to help you defensively.
I go back to it again, Stevie.
And he's better than McTominay. And he's better than Fred. But unfortunately, they do a better job defensively. And you have to defend before anyone else. You say it all the time. You have to win the battle straight away. And you ain't winning the battle with this guy.
But
not a Man United.
When he was at Juventus, when he played for Juventus, because he knew his role in the side, he knew what he had to do.
They're a good team.
He was a brilliant defensive player.
All right, gentlemen, let's leave our Pogba discussion there for now. Get a couple quick picks ahead of Saturday's game. Rabo, how do you think it'll go down at Old Trafford?
I think Manchester City will dominate the game, and they've got Aguero back, and hopefully he starts, because when he's playing, they're a much better side. So I'm going to go for a Manchester City win.
Stevie?
I've got absolutely no idea. I change every week. I go, oh, Man United, this is perfect. They'll sit tight and break and win. And then they go and throw it in my face. And then I go the other way and say, nah, there's no way they'll win. And then they win. I honestly don't know. I'm going to go with City. Because at least you know what you're going to get from them. But really, it's a toss of your coin on United right now.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Plenty more discussion on the Manchester Derby on tomorrow's show. We'll be looking ahead to the whole weekend across Europe. Craig, Don, and many others will join us.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Reaction to Inter Milan's failure to qualify for either the Champions League or Europa League knockout rounds continues to pour in across Italy. Gazzetta dello Sport, no translation needed there. Euro flop. Bravo is still with us, as is Mina Rizzucchi, who joins the show. Mina, I'll start with you. This was just perfectly set up for Inter. They needed just that one goal against Shakhtar Donetsk. Couldn't get it to get through to the Champions League knockout rounds. Describe the level of disappointment then around this result.
Hugely disappointing. And I think that you could really see that from the press conference that Antonio Conte held afterwards, when he was answering as well to Sky Italia to questions being posed by the likes of Fabio Capello. And he was so irritable. You could tell that the team wanted this so much, but at the same time, didn't really know. They were carrying out the instructions handed to him, but it was almost like there was too much nervous energy. It was like they only had this plan A. There was no plan B. It was a question posed by Fabio Capello. Is there a plan B? And he said, yes, but I'm not going to tell you. So is this just going to be a secret that we all just hold on to? And perhaps one day we might get to figure this out, because when it looks like when you're playing Shakhtar Donetsk and you really need to get another win, I mean, not just for the simple sake that the reputation of the club is on the line here, but it's also money. At the end of the day, Champions League and victories in that tournament and progression in that tournament allows you to buy the players that can make Antonio Conte happy. Those are one of the reasons why Juventus could build and eventually have the squad that they have. But considering 230 million has been invested into the squad after Conte has arrived at Inter, it's too little, to be honest.
Mm. Ravo, you're a long-standing Conte admirer. Is he on the hook for this?
Yes, because it wasn't just this game. Yes, this was the game they should have won. They had chances to win. They didn't play particularly well. There was nervous energy, as Mina said. I don't think you had to change the tactics. They had to do what they were doing better. But it wasn't just in this game that they've lost their place in Europe. It was in the first couple of games where they didn't get wins, where they should have won again. I thought their performance at home against Real Madrid was really poor. Vidal inexplicably getting sent off. And that summed up the ill-discipline in that game. They haven't defended well enough in Europe. But if they'd have taken their chances in the game against Shakhtar, they should have won and they should have gone through. But it wasn't to be. And Antonio Conte, I said a couple of weeks ago, he was under a little bit of pressure because they lost badly to Real Madrid. Then they had two good wins in Serie A. He's now got to concentrate on Serie A.
Mina, saw you shaking your head. Why?
Yeah, no, because I don't think it's about doing the same thing better. I think that's the whole thing. They've already played Shakhtar. They had won 5-0 on the Europa League. And what has really annoyed Antonio Conte was that they had figured out a way of actually neutralizing Conte's side. So it was about trying to find something else. You know that when you're playing Inter, that what they're going to do
so
is
do you
basically
think,
go
do you
out
think
wide
plan B
and then
be?
Deliver.
What do you think plan B
It's always about
be,
delivering
then?
Crosses into the middle. They attempted 44 crosses. Nothing was going to work out.
So what should
you
plan,
need to be
what
able
should
to build
the plan
a play-
B have been?
Eriksen, having a bit more magic going through the middle, perhaps bringing on substitutions earlier than the 68th minute, perhaps taking Gagliardini and Ashley Young, who are having no effect on the game, a lot earlier, having an ability to do something other than just deliver crosses and hope that Lukaku can do something with his back to goal and continue to battle up front. I think it's become so predictable for Inter and Antonio Conte. And we know that when it comes to the Champions League and European trophies, that quality matters at the end of the day. I don't think it was a case of the players not carrying out the instructions. I think they did their job perfectly. I think the part of his job for somebody who's being paid 12 million, that is the second highest earner in Serie A as a coach, is Paolo Fonseca on 2.5 million. Look at the difference. For that to be just a tactical plan, the only club to have been knocked out of the Champions League. And we're talking about Shakhtar Donetsk, that's not even dominating the Ukrainian league. Dynamo Kiev is at the top of that league. It shouldn't be so easy to be able to just neutralize Lautaro Martinez and Romelu Lukaku, and that Inter have absolutely no way of getting through. Eriksen being thrown on and given 5 minutes, hopefully to find a plan. And he actually did something interesting. But unfortunately, he only had 5 minutes.
Mm. Well, Antonio Conte's game plan is always to get it into the front two as early as possible and to get the front two linking up with each other. Then if that's blocked off, they go wider and get crosses into the box. So plan B was getting crosses into the box, but they didn't get on the end of it, enough of them. So they created enough chances. They got the ball into the box enough times. Eriksen coming on. Eriksen is not wanted into Milan, and I'm not sure he was going to do anything. And I think Antonio was quite right when he said to the people that were asking him the questions, if I brought on Sanchez earlier, I'd have upset the balance of the side. I still thought that Lukaku and Martinez would get a goal at some point before the end of the game. By bringing on Sanchez, where were you going to bring him on? You're going to have to take one of those players off. And at the moment, Sanchez isn't good enough to take over. If he was going to play him in a wide area, I can understand it. But 15 minutes coming on is long enough to influence the game when you're just trying to get one goal. And I think the questioning was right to him. And I think he's got every right to answer it back the way he did.
Okay, Robert, let me ask you this question. When you are up against a team that is really not even trying to win the game, perhaps even staging just one or two real counterattacks, why are we playing with three central defenders? Why are not more risks being taken to try to invest in and put in players attack their balance?
Three centre backs, but they're not actually staying at the back. The two wide centre, particularly Bastoni, he's coming out with the ball. The wing backs are playing much, much higher. They're almost playing as an outside right and an outside left. And that's maybe where he could have brought on Sanchez to play in one of the wide areas. But they had lots of possession. They weren't really being threatened on the counter. But the wide centre halves weren't just playing as centre half. They were playing as attacking players, getting forward and getting balls into the front or getting it wide so crosses came into the box. I wouldn't really criticise Antonio Conte's change of tactics or lack of change of tactics. They just didn't do what they normally do well enough. And they haven't done it well enough in some of the other games.
Listen, Robert,
for me, I just think they need... Yeah.
Go
sorry.
Ahead, Mina.
I'm sorry. I just think they need to be able to know how to defeat sides when there isn't a lot of space in front of them. And the fact is when you are a very good defensive side that knows how to block the spaces, Inter always seem to struggle, and that's the obstacle they need to overcome.
All right, let's leave the Inter tactic talks for the next Serie A podcast. I want to ask you this, Mina, because you're there on the ground, so you got a sense of this. Gab hammered Antonio Conte after the post-match comments yesterday. What's been the reaction to what he said?
Oh, it's been everywhere, to be honest. And this is the problem. I mean, when you bring Antonio Conte, there's always a drama on the sidelines. It can be very entertaining. And we know that he knows how to get results, at least domestically. But unfortunately, at the moment, the way that he is responding to these things, we're talking about Fabio Capello, Alessandro Costacorta was also in the studio, who mentioned the fact that he felt very disappointed by his behavior. Capello said after the interview, after he had asked those questions, that he has to understand, Conte, that we can't only talk when things are going well. Sometimes questions need to be asked when things are going badly as well. And you would expect more of a reasoned, logical answer. At the end of the day, Capello also noted the fact that Gianpiero Gasperini did a tremendous job with Atalanta as well yesterday, qualifying against Ajax. And the fact is he was a great coach who knows how to change things in the middle of the game. And then happened to drop in Max Allegri's name, which is something that will infuriate Conte should he listen back to that. But I thought that that would be an interesting thing to add as well.
All right, guys, let's turn our attention to Juventus. We've talked a lot about the Juventus-Barcelona match, mostly from the Barcelona perspective on this show. Do you feel like we've seen the beginning of a turning point, Mina, under Andrea Pirlo? A couple good performances in the league and then really a total domination of Barcelona when it mattered most to get first in the group?
It's still very up and down. I mean, it wasn't a very good performance against Torino over the weekend, and then something clicked in the second half where it seemed like they wanted to play like a big team again and play it so with a lot more ambition, a lot more dedication and commitment to the cause. And that's when they managed to turn the game around. But Torino do have a history of always conceding goals and throwing away great leads. So I don't think too many conclusions can be drawn. When it came to Barcelona, Juventus are very good at upping their game when it's a big opponent. And Ronaldo had something to prove. A lot of the team had something to prove. And they enjoy and relish these big competitions. So I'd like to say this is the turning point. But as we all know, this is Andrea Pirlo's first season in coaching. I don't think that he really even knows what his starting midfield is, what he would want to see at the moment. Seems to work really well up front with Ronaldo and Morata, but other than defense and attack, the midfield is the area that he really needs to figure out before we can find some stability in that side.
Rabo, you called the Juventus-Barcelona match. Was there anything you saw from Juve that you hadn't seen to this point?
Well, I thought they were better organised. I thought they had more dynamism going forward. They tried to get the ball forward that little bit quicker. We saw Weston McKennie making runs from midfield. He's often been the holding midfield, but he was playing on the right-hand side of a midfield three, I would say, with Ramsey tucking in from the left-hand side. He made great runs, McKennie. I thought the centre-halves played well. De Ligt looked really composed on the ball and came out with it well. But Barcelona didn't press them, so it was easy for Bonucci, Danilo and De Ligt to come out with the ball and start their football and start their passing game going. But it was a good performance, but I agree with Mina. Remember the Benevento game? Juventus didn't play well in that. Yeah. They didn't play well against Torino in the first half. It's just one game against Barcelona doesn't make it the start of Juventus being a great side again.
Mina, real quick on Weston McKennie, couple goals in his last two games. How close is he to locking down a starting spot?
I would say very close. I mean, if you read any of the media, they're just talking, and it's a symphony of compliments at the moment for the American because of his ability to really get into the box, score those goals, make a difference, really pull that side up. And for a player who's come in from the Bundesliga to Serie A, we thought it would take him a lot longer to sort of understand what was going on because it's such a huge difference between such an attacking league to one that's so tactical. And yeah, McKennie has been a breath of fresh air. And Andrea Pirlo had taken wanted to really exhaust the fact that this was a wonderful player that he really wanted on the team. And he thought that he was such a great addition because he offers something different to all the other midfielders he has. And then it shows because he chose to play him against Barcelona, the biggest game and the one that would have secured them the top spot, which he did indeed help them do.
All right, then let's change gears. Some sad news out of Italy on Wednesday. Paolo Rossi, 1982 World Cup champion, also the Golden Boot and Golden Ball winner at that tournament, died at the age of 64. Gab Marcotti shared his thoughts on Rossi's legacy on the Thursday edition of the Gab and Jules podcast.
Well, look, I mean, we all, I think most football fans around the world, right, we're all defined by the first World Cup that we remember. And for me, the first World Cup that I remember was 1982, which is pretty good if you happen to be Italian like I am, because it worked out pretty well. Rossi was obviously at the center of that hat trick against Brazil, that epic game against what I think was the greatest World Cup team to never win a World Cup, at least in my lifetime. Yeah. That was absolutely epic. I got to meet him afterwards. He was always a very laid back, never took himself too seriously, and just a very kind of gentle guy. You know, I don't want to use the term lightweight in a negative sense, but that's kind of how it felt. When
was he expected to do so well in that World Cup?
No. He was coming off 2 years where he didn't play. He was embroiled in a betting scandal before that, and it was a really, really big deal that, you know, Enzo Berizzotti, the Italy manager at the time, took him back. It was a classic sort of redemption story for him. Never quite made the grade at club level after that World Cup, although they did bring him back for the 86 World Cup, but still, he was tremendous, tremendous striker, tremendous figure, I think.
Robbo, you would have been at the beginning of your professional career in 1982. What are your memories of Rossi at the 82 World Cup?
Well, it was his finishing ability. I mean, as Gab said there, Brazil were a magnificent side. They were the best team in the world at the time, and it was a perfect performance from Italy. They didn't have much of the ball, but every time they created a chance, Paolo Rossi scored it. And then he didn't just do it against Brazil. He then did it, I think, against Argentina, and he also did it against Poland. And Italy went on to win the final as well. So he was an outstanding striker, a good finisher. I don't think his link-up play was outstanding, but he did what he was asked to do, and that was finish off the chances that Italy were making in that World Cup. It was a great performance from him. A
couple goals in the semi-final, a goal in the final as well. Mina, I'm curious, what's been the reaction there in Italy, and where does he fit into kind of the pantheon of Italian football greats?
Certainly a legendary figure, especially because, as Gab mentioned, he had come off two seasons, obviously 2 years of not playing football, walked into the World Cup. A lot of criticism at the time because he was looked upon as sort of a ghost floating in the middle. And a lot of people had said at the time that he wasn't going to be fit. Was he really going to be ready to lead the line for Italy in a World Cup? And of course, he was fantastic with those three goals against Brazil and then scoring thereafter to win the Ballon d'Or. He's an icon. I think this was something that no one expected for him to go so early. It caused a lot of pain. Dino Zoff spoke about it because he just said it was something that we didn't realize. It's an incurable disease. We didn't realize we were going to lose him so soon. But when it comes to his legendary status, I think Paolo Rossi will always be the man who won the 1982 World Cup, the one who led the line beautifully, who did so much and was such a strong character and forward for both Juventus and Milan, two of the biggest clubs. But he was also a much loved pundit who always came on Sky Italia and offered such interesting takes on what's happening around football, and he'll be dearly missed.
Just a brutal year in the world of football continues. Plenty more perspective on Rossi and his legacy on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Robbo, as you just saw, is with Gab for that one. They discuss Rossi and much more.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Who should have won the 2020 Ballon d'Or? Oh, the important question is always answered on our website. Of course, France Football canceling the award in light of the pandemic. So we put our experts to vote, all 10 of them apparently. That's what we've got. Robert Lewandowski gets 7 of the 10 votes, and then one each from Manuel Neuer, Erling Haaland, and Marcus Rashford. By the way, the Marcus Rashford vote from Sid Lowe, who highlighted Rashford's humanitarian efforts. Robbo and Stevie are back with us. Shaka Hislop is with us as well. Shaka, I'll start with you. Just one vote for Manuel Neuer's, man. Goalies can't get any respect, huh?
Well, no, we can't at the best of times, Sebi, but in this season, I'm sympathetic. I went for Robert Lewandowski. Over 50 goals during the course of the season. Bayern Munich winning the Bundesliga, winning the Champions League. 100% in the Champions League, I thought there could only be one vote.
Wow, Shaka, the biggest surprise there is that you were one of the experts that was asked to do it. I didn't know. All right, Stevie, not one single vote for either Cristiano Ronaldo or Messi, who have won the award 11 of the last 12 years. Whatever you say, that's jarring, isn't it?
Oh, you could look at it the other way and say that absolutely Lewandowski was head and shoulders above everybody else, which is the truth. Listen, you could have had three, four, five, or six people who were second, because really there was a lot of players who were good, but there was one that stood out, and that was Robert Lewandowski. This is the easiest one to pick in a long, long time, and neither Ronaldo or Messi deserved to win it. Certainly, they would have been probably in the top 10. Because they're just fantastic. But I got to say, though, Manuel Neuer, really? Mm. When Lewandowski's... I mean, Bayern Munich were winning 4 and 5 every week, so how can Manuel Neuer get it? I'm sorry, I don't get that one. Yep. But the right man won it in the end.
Okay. Robbo, what do you think? The last time we've seen Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi win the Ballon d'Or, or you think they'll get one more between the two of them?
If Messi gets a move and goes and plays at Manchester City or somewhere like that and inspires Manchester City to go and win the Champions League, he might win it again, but I don't think Ronaldo will win it again. Hmm. And we're talking about Ronaldo being a goal scorer now. Well, he didn't score as many goals as Lewandowski. Lewandowski also worked harder to close the ball down, and he made a lot of assists as well. So Lewandowski was the right player, and Ronaldo and Messi this time wouldn't have been anywhere near it.
People all over the world then argue over the Ballon d'Or. In our YouTube comments, they argue very, very heatedly about Shaka's power rankings. Shaka, your latest power rankings, we're looking at them now. Explain your work.
I don't think there's much explanation needed. Leipzig get some love after the week that they had. 3 games, 18 goals, 2 wins and a draw. That draw coming against Bayern Munich, so they're in. Atletico Madrid top in Spain through to the next round. Rangers just continue doing Rangers things in Scotland. So though they dropped a couple of places, that's more to do with Juventus, who've now gone 9 unbeaten through to the next round. PSG with a statement win in the Champions League. Chelsea and Liverpool, though they drew in the Champions League, statement wins in the Premier League. Bayern, well, they dropped 2 because of that draw with Leipzig. Life is tough at the top. Spurs beating their North London rivals. AC Milan back on top, just continuing to go from strength to strength in Serie A. There can be no arguing with this week's power ranking, Sebastian. That I'm certain of.
Okay. Stevie, Liverpool in there at number 4. Any qualms or arguing, as Shaka likes to put it, with his power rankings?
Who cares?
Okay, Craig Burley.
I don't care about any of the rest of them. Shaka has broadened his horizons at last, and he's got a team for Scotland in it, and rightly so. Glasgow Rangers flying high at the top of the Premier League and flying high in the Europa League, top of the group, absolutely coasting. Shaka, I'm very proud of you. Thank you very much.
Wow.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you. You're an easy man to please, clearly.
All right. He gets the Steve Nichol stamp of approval. Robbo, will you give your stamp of approval?
Well, I was going to say exactly the opposite. I thought the power rankings were brilliant. It was all going well. And then you just mentioned that one word, Scotland. And they just blew it out the water. You know, you just can't have a team from Scotland. I mean, have you seen their league?
You assassin. And for those that don't know, we call English people sassenachs.
Yes,
all right?
Yeah.
And it's not a nice term.
Okay, well, glad you brought it to the show. Maybe we'll get some more not nice terms in Extra Time. This trio will be back taking your tweets. Lots of fun. If you ever want to see Extra Time, make sure to check it out on our ESPNFC YouTube channel.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Major League Soccer announcing its top 25 greatest players of all time. I'm going to go through the list real quick here, and then we'll have some discussion about it. Jeff Agus, Kyle Beckerman, David Beckham, Carlos Bocanegra, Dwayne De Rosario, Clint Dempsey, Landon Donovan, Marco Echeverri, Robin Fraser, Sebastian Giovinco, Kevin Hartman, Kobe Jones, Robbie Keane, Chad Marshall, Joseph Martinez, one of the few active players on the list, Tony Miola, Jaime Moreno, Eddie Pope, Preki, Steve Ralston, Nick Romano, Carlos Valderrama, a couple other active guys, Diego Valeri, Chris Wondolowski, Bradley Wright Phillips as well. For a little more perspective, we welcome back Stevie Nichol and Shaka Hislop. Guys, the criteria on this list, I think, was intentionally vague. Achievements on the field, but also how they helped advance the league off the field. Stevie, a couple of your former players made it. Steve Ralston won, just to name one. Clint Dempsey as well. Any other snubs that come to mind for you, though?
Listen, as coaches, we all love our own players, and I could argue for a lot of them, but I would say there's two. The fact that you got three goalkeepers in there, I would suggest Matt Rees ahead of at least one of them. But there is one missing that I just do not understand. A guy who was the most dominant defensive midfielder, stroke attacker maybe, probably for a six-year period, was Shaury Joseph. I cannot believe that Shaury Joseph has not made it in to that list.
Yeah, it's a position that didn't get much love on the list. Stevie, Kyle Beckerman, really the only holding midfielder that was in the top 25. Shaka, any obvious absences for you?
Listen, for me, and you're right to mention the great area of advancing the game off the field. I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean, but Jeff Cunningham, Jamaican boy, U.S. international, for me, is one who should have been included in this list. I played him at Real Salt Lake. You have to have a game plan when you come up against him. And even when you just look at his numbers, a goal in three for Columbus, a goal every other game played for FC Dallas, that for me is worthy of making anybody's list.
All right, well, this is really just something to complain about. Our producers asked me, Seb, do you have anything to complain about? The answer to that is always yes. So I'll take a moment here to point out a couple absences that I might have liked to see. First of all, let's go way back, right? Let's go back to the early 90s. A couple Central American players that didn't make the list. Mauricio Cienfuegos played for the LA Galaxy. Raul Diaz Arce played for DC United. I can't speak to what Cienfuegos may have done in Los Angeles, but I can tell you this, that supporters culture that the league likes to brag about and put on all of its publicity material, that started at RFK Stadium, and it started because 3,000 to 5,000 extra El Salvadoran fans came to watch Raul Diaz Arce. So if we're talking about impact on the future of the league, that supporters culture doesn't exist without Diaz Arce and what he meant in those two seasons, 96-97 at DC United. Then I feel personally attacked by the fact that there's not a Mexican player on this list. You telling me no Jorge Campos, no Cuauhtémoc Blanco, okay, fine. Bigger off the field than on the field. No Carlos Vela?
Hold on a second.
No Carlos Vela?
Hold on a second.
Come on. Go on, Stevie.
Hold on a second.
What's your complaint to my complaint?
So is this because of what they did before they went to MLS? Or are you telling me that Jorge Campos was absolutely world-class in MLS?
No, I'm not telling you Jorge Campos was world-class
in MLS. Right, well, there you go.
I mentioned
some
of the
stars. So why are you calling it a top 25 if he didn't?
I'm mentioning some of the stars to build up to the person that I want to make the case about. It's Carlos Vela. This guy's a league MVP, a golden boot, set the record, and then all the off-the-field stuff, you have to give it to him as well. He's the top-selling jersey in MLS, and by far the most... How long's he been there? This is the third season.
And he's 28 years old.
He's 30s. He's in his 30s now.
And you're looking for him. I tell you what. Do you know what?
Nobody has scored more goals in Giovinco. The history of the league in a season.
I tell you what, before you get to your point, why is Giovinco winning? He played two seasons.
There you go. If Giovinco,
again,
if Giovinco can make it, Vela can make it.
A guy that shouldn't have been there. Same as Vela. Shouldn't be there.
Okay. Giovinco, four seasons then for TFC in MLS. Fine. If you guys don't want to hear my complaints, fair enough. Fair enough. Let's move on to the MLS action coming up. and not looking back, MLS Cup coming up this weekend, Saturday night in Columbus, Seattle, and Columbus Crew. Shaka, who you got in this one?
What kind of question is that? One of them has a player from Trinidad and Tobago playing for them, Jovan Jones, for Seattle Sounders. The other doesn't. I'll leave you to hazard a guess, Sebi.
Okay, great. Yeah, top-notch analysis here. Stevie, are there Scottish players involved in this?
I don't think so. Maybe some distant relatives from somewhere, but not particularly 100% fully bred Scotsman, shall we say. Listen, I'm going to go with Seattle for one reason only. Not because that I think they're a better side than Columbus, because they've got the experience. You know, in my opinion, they've got experience. And regardless, had Columbus had a fan base behind them at home, then I was probably swayed for Columbus. But the fact there's nobody there, the fact that Seattle's got all the experience in the world will be the deciding factor.
Yeah, fourth final in the last 5 years for Seattle Sounders. All right, guys, thank you very much. We'll be discussing MLS Cup quite a bit more on tomorrow's edition of the show. Brian Schmetzer, the manager for Seattle Sounders, will join us for a full interview looking ahead to the final against Columbus Crew. Again, that's Saturday night in Ohio. All right, that's all the time we've got for today's edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to everyone involved. Don't worry, we got plenty more to come on Extra Time. It's Stevie, Shaka, and Stuart Robson taking your tweets. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Thursday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. We have your questions from Twitter. We have Stuart Robson, Steve Nichol, and Shaka Hislop here to answer them. First one for you, Robbo. Do you think Chelsea can win the Champions League with the squad they have?
They could, but I don't think they will. I think there's a couple of better sides. I think Frank Lampard's done a good job. They've got some good attacking players. They're getting better defensively. They're getting better all round. And I think Kante, whatever you want to call him, is still the key player for them as the holding midfield player. They can, but I don't think they will.
Stevie, I saw those eyebrows shoot up.
I'm absolutely 100% behind Robbo. They could, because they've got talent enough to win it, but they're not my favourites. I think there's a couple of sides better than them. But put it this way, I don't think anybody wants to draw Chelsea in any of the next few rounds, wherever it may be.
Fair enough. Next question from Dan, the Orange Man. Why do Manchester City continually loan Angelino out? Even if he has shortcomings defensively, isn't he better and less injury-prone than Mendy? Robbo, every time Angelino has a good game, these questions pop up, don't they?
They do. When he was at Manchester City, he put in some good performances, but he struggles defensively. He's all right playing as a very good player when he's playing as a wing-back high up the field, but I'd still question his defensive qualities. Obviously, Guardiola didn't fancy him that much and has allowed him to go out on loan. Zinchenko has played at left back. They've had Ake playing at left back. I wouldn't say he's any worse than any of those players, but obviously at the moment he feels he's better off going out on loan.
Shaka, I haven't gotten you involved yet, but the next one is just for you. Who is your best friend? Your best friend while playing at West Ham? Of course, Shaka, famous hammer of the year.
At West Ham, probably Steve Lomas, who lived about four or five houses away from me. So our families just got to know each other through that, and so we spent a lot of time together as the result. But unsurprisingly, I got on well with everybody. Sebastian?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did.
What about David James? Was he your mate, David James?
He didn't live that close to me, Stuart Robson.
I think that says it all.
There you go. Some relationships are about convenience. Stevie, is your worst nightmare waking up to find Liverpool playing Atletico Madrid in the first knockout round?
Ooh.
Absolutely not. I've completely forgotten about that. So, no.
No? What is your worst nightmare?
Not at all. No, my worst nightmare would be England winning the World Cup again.
There
couldn't be too many things to get worse than that. Seriously.
Yeah, we'd have to hear about it for another 6 years.
66. How many years?
Yeah.
60.
54. 54 we're at.
54 years and they're still talking about it, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Robert, what do you think of that?
What, about England winning the World Cup again? I couldn't care less whether England won the World Cup again. The one thing that we can rest assured is that Scotland will never win it and will probably never qualify it either.
Well, easy. We're going to have like a 63-team World Cup eventually, dude. Everybody's going to be in it.
I believe Mr. Robson said Leicester City wouldn't win the Premier League either, so we might have a chance.
Oh, I never said anything of the sort, Stevie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Provide
the
tape.
You said they'd win it. Yeah, you said they'd win it.
Right at the start of the season, Leicester the favourites. Ranieri's going to be the king of the Premier League.
Fitting
yeah,
that
you did, I remember it.
We get this question on a Thursday. Why is everyone on this show so dismissive of the Europa League? It's a grueling competition, and the list of winning teams is impressive. Shaka, why do you hate the Europa League?
I hate the early rounds of Europa League. I think the later rounds, when you get to see the better clubs and the better football, it becomes a very interesting competition. Just the early rounds, I think, is just filled with too many mediocre teams, and I'm being as kind as I possibly can. You see the bigger clubs just putting out their second and third string teams, and that gets tiring, you know. But the later rounds, when it really starts to mean something, and those clubs sense that they maybe can go on and win it and get a berth in the Champions League, it gets very interesting. That I'll agree to.
Stevie, you were just saying off air that you love the Europa League, actually.
Yeah, I must have been another Steven. No, listen, the truth is, it's a consolation cup, isn't it? So, it depends how you look on a consolation cup. If you're Jose Mourinho, he loves it. He puts it up there with every other tournament. But the truth is, it's a bit of a consolation cup. That's exactly what it is.
Shaka, you mentioned earlier how much you get along with everybody. How much did the English weather affect your sunny demeanor?
That was tough. I honestly, the English weather is high because it's so great. You know, I live in the US now. I live just outside Boston, and it gets a whole lot colder. But at least the sun is up, and that is a lot easier for me to deal with than just the kind of grey wetness of England. That's tough.
Plus, you were.
I used to go back home for internationals. That was always good.
Did you get sick a lot? Sun. Did you get sick a lot from going from the cold back to the warm?
No, I'm a very tough character. So
yeah, I'll bet that's what it was. For Stevie, what is your opinion on players who play fullback and center back, since you once did those positions? Is it the mindset, or does it require certain abilities to be good in both positions?
Well, it's definitely a mindset. You know, when you move from one position to another, you have to have the mindset that it's another challenge. But you also, more than anything, at centre back, you have to be able to read the game. You know, you're basically, your job should be putting fires out before they start, as opposed to making last ditch tackles, slide tackles, challenges. You know, the best defenders are the ones that you never see, because they've already read the situation. They've already got themselves in a position where either the pass isn't going to be played because they're in a good spot, or you've got there early and you've intercepted it. So those are the key things, particularly at centre-back.
Stevie, when you were the Pro Football Writers Player of the Year, it was as a centre-back, yeah?
It was, yeah. Yep.
Shaka. Oh, my God, I can't believe this. This is just... Shaka, how big is the pressure of playing as a keeper compared to the pressure of other positions? Of course, Shaka, you were a well-known forward at Howard University.
I also had that wonderful assist for West Ham against Spurs. I'd like to remind everybody about as well.
Are we going to talk about the skying assist?
My assist for Anton Ferdinand. Yes, that one, Sebastian. Everybody knows. It was the highest pressure job in sports. In all of sports.
Wow.
Seth, let me just tell you that I played twice in goal for Arsenal. And it was so easy. I mean, you didn't break sweat. Oh, the hardest thing was kicking the ball out from the goal kicks with one of those heavy balls you were talking about, Stevie, last week when you said that the balls were so heavy in our day that you couldn't kick them. Well, that was certainly a problem when it was wet and muddy and you were taking goal kicks. But the actual goalkeeping, easy as anything.
Stevie?
We can use your feet and your hands. I mean, easy peasy. Take your pick. I don't fancy kicking this one. I'll just pick it up.
Listen,
I'll just pick it up.
Stevie's point in the previous question that defenders are trying to put out fires when they start. Goalkeepers are the firemen. And when the defenders go and strike in matches all over the place, the goalkeeper has to be there to put those fires out. Pressure.
All right. We've now compared ourselves to real-life heroes, firemen. Right. Okay, got it.
Shaka used to put a towel and a big fire extinguisher in the back of his goal. And he'd walk out like that with a fire extinguisher over his shoulder.
Call me fireman.
Throw his drink just in, throw his gloves in, and then throw the fire extinguisher friend. In.
He also had one in the back of his Maserati. I saw it.
Shaka. Yep. It's like a fog machine. That's how he would come out before the games. That's right. Shaka, right, the lads. Extinguisher, his
fires
lot.
Fires out.
All right, final question here for you, Robbo. Which show do you like more, ESPN FC or Gab and Jules?
Of course, when you're presenting, Seb, it has to be ESPN FC. Shaka's on and Stevie's on. It has to be that. It all depends who I'm working on the Gab and Jules show. Yeah. It's always nicer to work with Jules because you get a word in. When you're working with Gab, you might as well not be. I shouldn't say that.
What show?
The Gab and Jules show.
I've never heard it. When's that on?
Gab and Jules show. It's on soon.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, we'll. But when never it's Gab, Robbo, you know, you don't get paid by the word, so you just kind of show up, look good.
Yeah, you show up, you listen to him, and it's great that the producer tells us what we're going to do, and then Gab just changes it completely and does what he wants to do. It's a great show.
At least he doesn't cut people off like one sentence into their answer ever on that show. That's a good thing.
No, you're right. All right, come on. Can we go? I've got to drive to Boston.
No, I got to cut you off there, Stevie. Stevie's got a long ride, so we got to let him go. All right, that's it for Stevie, Shaka, Robbo. We'll be back with plenty more ESPN FC tomorrow. A look ahead towards all the weekend action. Don't miss it.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.